welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's so good to be back in studio. I do prefer working with you here in studio rather than remotely in my office, because the sound, no matter what we do, the sound doesn't come out quite as good. And me choosing a place with people is odd, coming from an introvert. But I think I'm beginning to think I'm only a partial introvert, because I still enjoy live conversations with interesting people. And interesting certainly describes our guest today. I have known Haley Chapman for longer than 15 years. Isn't that right, Haley? It's got to be 15 years.
Yeah, it has to be. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
When we first met in the baseball world.
In the baseball world. And you were like 9 or 10 years old, I'm guessing. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you've grown up to be an impressive, enthusiastic young woman with unique talents and most challenging dreams. Now, I want to read your bio that says, Haley Chapman is a young entertainment industry professional living in Los Angeles, California. Most recently, she has worked as a publicist at multiple record studios, television, and film production studios, including Dick Clark Productions. Haley is also, this is an area of interest, is also a most gifted singer-songwriter, having released her first EP at 18 years old. She attended Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee, where she received her degree in music, business, and entertainment industry studies. I am keenly interested in chatting with Haley about the challenging and ultra-competitive journey of a brilliant and creative artist. So with that, let's bring Haley Chapman onto the show. Haley, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is exciting. I'm really glad that you reached out. I've never done anything like this before.
Well, not a lot of people haven't. And so, you know, the fun thing about this show is it really is conversational. It's not, you know, you don't have to come prepared. I don't even send you notes on the show. You're just sitting there wondering, what is he going to talk to me about? And so it really is, it's dynamic, and the conversation emerges, and so it makes it a lot of fun. We talked last week on the show about this being jazz, and about where we have sort of a direction, but there's a lot of improvisation on, like in jazz musicians, and I love going into the unknown and into improvisation, so I'm certain we will hit some of that. Now, I have to say, for me, it's so fun to watch a vibrant young girl like yourself grow into an adult and become an even more vibrant and adult, and especially when you bring such enviable talent into our world. Now you mentioned it earlier, but for our listeners' information, your dad and I coached a youth baseball team, and you were one of the young sisters that I say were condemned to watching your brother and his friends play baseball forever. I can't imagine how painful that was.
Yeah, it's a big part of my, I would say, from like 9 until, I don't know, maybe like 13 or so, those years were spent at baseball fields with the other sisters of the boys that were playing. And I would say it was I was kind of held captive for those years. There wasn't really a way around it, but, you know, we got through it.
Did the other girls feel the same way?
I think so. I think we just didn't know anything different, but I will say that my brother did end up getting dragged to some of my cheer competitions, so we're kind of even.
Oh, good. So he had to pay his dues. But your cheer competitions,
oh, yeah.
Now I forgot that you were in cheer. You were really quite successful in cheer, were you not?
I that was another thing with, I kind of had to balance it with music. It was like a choice that I had to make in high school, which was, how much time do I want to spend on music? How much time do I want to spend on cheer? Because that was very important to me. I was a competitive cheerleader for like 5 years, 5 or 6 years, and ended up not doing it in college or anything. So really going towards my music goal when I turned 18. So through high school, I kind of was a cheerleader and did music as well. It kind of, it was a balancing act for a while.
But that, I can see that competitive nature, because I, you know, I don't know if your mom is competitive, but I know your dad is, you know, having coached with him, is ultra competitive.
And oh, yeah.
So I'm sure he cheered you on in your competition in cheer. That's kind of a redundant
use of words.
Oh, yeah.
He loved that stuff. He would always be the dad that was, like, videoing the whole thing and then would, like, show it back to me later and it, say what he liked about it, what was so cool. And, yeah, and then he plays softball now, and he, like, with his friends, and even that, he's so competitive. But maybe I get it from him.
Yeah, you know what? When your dad and I were talking, when we talked about having you on the show, I did not realize your dad was so much younger than me. I looked at him as peer all that time, and we are like 17 years difference. Your dad is like 17.
Really?
Yeah, you know, who knows what I was doing at 17 when he was born? Who knows what kind of hell-raising I was into the year that he was born? I had no idea we had that kind of difference. He's 54, I'm 71, so...
Wow, I didn't realize that.
You didn't realize I was such an old fart?
No, age is but a number. We know this.
Well, it's a number, but it has physical ramifications. Although, you know, honestly, Haley, I think I am entering into the best phase of my life ever. I'm healthy. I eat well. My weight is contained, and
good.
I'm doing wonderful things with my life. So I'm very pleased.
That's also the thing I was thinking about before this too, about how it's kind of, there's really no timeline on your life, especially, you know, being in my mid 20s. I always thought, you know, as you go through your 20s and you get to the end of your 20s, you need to have XYZ done by this date, and it's just not true. You can start a podcast when you're in your 70s. You can continue pursuing your dreams forever. And it's hard to understand that until you're actually like there, but
until you're old. Yeah, you don't get it. You know, there's an old saying that education is wasted on the young, that the young don't quite you know, that the older appreciate it. And there are a lot of false goals that are set on you, that are culturally set on you, that, I mean, you have a loving, wonderful family, but, you know, you have parental designs that are set on you that become part of you. And then part of your growth is an unlearning process, don't you think?
100%. It's all about creating your own sort of timeline and expectations for yourself, and kind of dismantling the expectations that the world kind of puts on young people or anyone of any age. Honestly, I feel like we all just put this pressure on ourselves to achieve everything that we want to achieve before we, you know, hit a certain age. And it's all made up. None of it is real, and none of it is really going to define your entire life. You know, you kind of just got to go after what you want, even if it doesn't happen at the exact time that you wanted it to.
Now, see, I understand that with growing older, but you know what I don't understand is, at your age, at such a young age, how do you begin to define what is that core you, that authentic integrity, you know, living according to your own personal integrity? as opposed to what you've been taught. How do you go about discovering who the true you is inside? Have you created some kind of process or some kind of thinking or things you've done?
It's trial and error, I think. It's going after what you want, but the second that it doesn't go your way, it's adapting and it's understanding that if a door doesn't open for you, that's not your door. And there's always a time to pursue your dreams. Like there's not a cutoff age. And I feel like, especially this year in 2020, I don't really think it went the way anybody planned. So it really was a year of trying to understand that nothing really ever goes as planned, but the way that things turn out is the way that they were supposed to happen. And you kind of just have to adapt to it, I think, because there were a lot of things I kind of expected to happen by the age that I'm at, and it didn't go exactly the way that I thought it would, and that's okay. You know, we're adapting to it.
Yeah. I'm, you know, we're going to talk about adapting and, you know, and there's this fine line between adaptation and perseverance. You know, sometimes it's the appropriate thing to persevere, and sometimes there's a time to say, this is complete, it's time to move on. And and those are very, very, very difficult decisions. And, you know, I don't want to keep referring to you as so young, but I'm always impressed at the wisdom of the youth. That, you know, when I was your age, I was a hellraiser, and I was not thinking of anything about wisdom of life but partying. That was, you know, my wisest thing was what party is available and who's going and what girls are going to attend. That was, you know, that was the way I spent my 20s. And you were quite different. Now, I do want to ask, you know, when we were talking about finding that true and core self, were you raised in a culture that had that honored that sort of freedom, or was there certain expectations of you that you had to unlearn?
I think I was raised in a way where I was free to kind of do whatever I want. My parents really supported me following my dreams of music and didn't really put that pressure on me of like, go to college, go get a job, get married, blah, blah, blah. They never really put any of that pressure on me, which I'm super thankful for. I think all the pressure that I put is from like myself, like the pressure that I feel to get things done, and for the plans that I put in place for my life, I feel like I put all that on myself. And I think that that's kind of gotten me to where I am, and it kind of, that kind of fuels my ambition. And it's funny, my brother and I, and then my parents, we all talk about it, about how like we're all individually ambitious, and we all kind of put that pressure on ourselves to like get us to where we want to go. So it's interesting to think about it that way, because I know a lot of people who have parents that are like, you need to do X, Y, Z and follow these steps. And I never really had that, which was nice that I kind of got to figure out my own future and my own timeline on my own account.
You know, and knowing your parents, I can see that, because I can see that certainly in your mom, that your mom seems to be very strong that way. Your dad may be a little bit more controlling, but he is also, he's also open. You present your dad with a good case, you know, with a good rationale, and he's open to think outside the box. That's my experience with your dad anyway.
Absolutely. You described it perfectly. My dad is exactly like that, and then my mom is more like, she's kind of the one that's tough on herself and like wants to do really well in everything she does and succeed in everything she does, which is my brother to a T. And then me and my dad are kind of on the side of like, well, like figuring it out as we go and not really being too hard on ourselves.
Oh, really? I would never expected your mom and your brother more in tune than your brother and your dad.
They are. It's interesting. It's a different dynamic. I think the perfectionist side is my mom and my brother, and the ambition is definitely in my dad as well. But I feel like me and my dad are less perfectionists and more kind of like, you'll get there when you get there. Like, just keep working hard and keep your head down, do the work, and you'll end up where you're going eventually, or like when it's supposed to happen. And I think my mom and my brother are a little less patient than that.
I just got a quote last week from our you know, we just had a wonderful guest last week named Lindsay Davis, and she gave a Rumi quote that said, you are entitled to your labor, but you are not entitled to the fruits of your labor. The fruits of your labor will come as they may. And we always think that if we do this certain labor, then the fruits are certain to come. But life throws way too many curves, you know, using a baseball term, but throws too many curves at us to predict what our fruit will be. Now tell me, so you're in cheer, you're doing really well in cheer, and your team evidently is a competitive team and probably nationally competitive, I would assume.
Yeah, we actually made it to the world's competition. So like every team and that made it to the world was from obviously all over the globe, and that was kind of the peak. That was where I ended my career at the top.
Oh, that's not a bad place to end. But what I'd like to talk about is I want to talk about, you know, I probably should want to talk about cheer more, but since I've heard you sing and, you know, I had it all planned out that our interlude and our closing were going to be yours, but then we found out copyright, we're not allowed to do it, and so I'm so disappointed. But listeners on the show notes, Haley's EPs will be available, and you will be blown away by this young woman's voice. Tell me, I'd kind of like to have you bring me up to speed, and I'd like to start with when and how you discovered you were such a gifted singer and songwriter as well, right?
Yeah. I kind of started in sixth grade elementary school when I joined choir and got the solo in choir and was super into it. Did choir as well in high school. And I don't think it's kind of a thing that you realize when you start singing in front of other people. Like, it's kind of something that you don't really understand on your own. At least I didn't until I started singing in choir, and people would, you know, say like, wow, like, you're really good. And I would kind of be like, oh, thanks, you know, and keep trying. And I would do the solos, and then eventually I found this songwriting sort of academy, if you will, that was in Orange County, and basically started going there to do songwriting and started recording music, and obviously just fell in love. It was like heaven on earth for me. And I started songwriting, and then along came some songs that we really loved and decided that it was time for me to release some music, and ended up releasing my first EP through that songwriting academy / record label that was in Orange County. So that's kind of where I decided it was like kind of a real thing. Like, I was like, we can actually go for this. We can actually do this and pursue a career in music. And then I went to college in Nashville for music business.
Not for singing. You went for business.
Right. So I eventually wanted to go for commercial voice and do their vocal program and everything like that. But at the end of the day, I kind of wanted to be able to walk away from college with some sort of business degree or some, you know, a Bachelor of Arts in something that is a little more, I don't know, just not voice, you know. So I eventually fell in love with the business side of it, more than I thought I would, and interned at a couple record labels in Nashville during college, and eventually made my way into the publicity and marketing fields at the record labels, and decided to kind of go that route at the moment. It was sort of a, you can still pursue music while you're, you know, working on the business side of it, you know? So you have
food on the table while you're a starving artist.
That is also a huge, a huge factor as well. But I really enjoyed it, and eventually moved back after college. I moved back home to Orange County and was interviewing for jobs in LA, and eventually got my job as a publicist at Dick Clark Productions, where it's like a live television and film production company. So not exactly where I thought I'd end up again. Never really know your plan, but I was there for about 2.5 years, and yeah, I loved it.
What was the attraction of that over singing? I mean, you know, I know you never lost the passion for singing, but how did business sort of compensate for that passion for singing? What is it about business that strikes you that you seem to have passion around that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think being in on the business side of it, after trying to kind of quote unquote make it as an artist, I really was intrigued about being on an artist team at a label, to where you can be a part of them quote unquote making it, and be someone behind the creative process of developing a, you know, a launch plan for their single or their album, or just kind of being like understanding how the business worked was so eye-opening to me. And I really wanted to be a part of that creative process and see how things work behind the scenes. I got to meet a lot of awesome people that really taught me a lot about the business. And I don't know, I think I was just very intrigued because I understood it. Like, I understood how it worked on the consumer side, and then also how artist team, they kind of approach their fan base in a different way. And I think it just clicked for me. And I really thought that I would excel there, and ended up doing really well and really liking it, but obviously still keeping my passion for music and still recording covers and writing and posting singing videos and stuff like that. So,
well, I want to come back to the music part, but I want to talk to something, because I think you really brought up a very important point that I think is essential to make clear, and that too often we equate creativity with the arts. If you're creative, mm-hmm. you're either a poet, a painter, a singer, a sculptor, you know, some sort of either performing art or hand finger art. You are, but there is a creative side, that is that creative management of life mm-hmm. side that you know, I've had so many different careers in life, and I have absolutely no expertise in them, and I like to pardon the expression, but I'm really good at figuring shit out. You know, it was like when I became a baseball coach. I knew nothing of baseball coaching, but I went to camps, studied baseball, would go to different people, learn baseball, go to high school practices and watched. And, you know, I've got, you know, Haley, I told your dad the other day and he was shocked, but I have 7 players that I coach that play big league baseball right now. That play not professional baseball in the minors, but play in the big leagues. And this came from somebody who knew nothing about baseball, you know, but it was just that you figure stuff out. And that is a creative angle that people don't think of, that creative angle. And you're seeing that in the business side of what you do, are you not?
Yeah, absolutely. And interesting because you're all, it's kind of the same thing of learning by just trying and learning by jumping in and faking it till you make it, as I like to call it. And I felt like I kind of did that in my first year at my job, but also when I was putting out music and stuff like that. It's, you kind of just go for it and you figure it out along the way.
Yes.
And sometimes you succeed, but you know, you just learn and you keep going. So I felt the same way in my job and when I was first starting music.
Is there not? Did you ever face that fraud imposter syndrome that I really don't have it? I'm a fraud. I'm an imposter here.
Absolutely. When I started my first job right out of college and was at this huge entertainment company, I was like, what am I doing here? Like, who did I fool to get this job? Like, how did this happen? And even when my boss and my team would say, like, you're doing such a good job, blah, blah, blah. Like, I started at that company in a huge, huge role as a publicist at 21 years old. And I had no idea what I was doing. But even when they would say, you know, you're killing it, you're doing great, I'm like, no, I'm not. I don't know what I'm doing. But I realized that happens a lot in life, not just in your job, just in life in general. Everything that you try that's new, you just keep going. it's never going to be perfect. You know,
I think an enviable place that I'm now viewing is that fraud or imposter syndrome, because what it means is that I don't have my act together, because if I'm not a fraud, then I think I'm an expert, and there is no such thing as an expert, because there's too many variables in life that you have to be able to adjust to. You have to be able to manage. You have to be able to change. You have to think on the fly. You know, you're many times I look at my best decisions are made under crisis. That, you know, I don't have time to think about it. I just have time to respond. And those are better decisions. And some would call that a fraud, but I don't think so. What I want to do, and the direction I'm heading, I think this may be early for a break, but I think I want to take a break now because I kind of want to do a little bit of a direction change. And so I'm so sorry we're not playing your song. We're playing mine. So just kind of hold on for a second. We'll be right back.
No problem.
Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I have a very special guest, Haley Chapman, who is a singer-songwriter, brilliant publicist, has worked with several record labels, and has done exceedingly well at business, at the same time not giving up on her dreams of being a singer-songwriter. And Haley, what I want to do now is I would like to sort of jump into that journey, because I know me and most likely my listeners are really interested in that journey, because, you know, it's like anything, you know, it's like acting, it's like athletics, it's you can be really, really good, but only the really, really, really good ones make it. You know, it's so difficult. It's such a, and many times it's not about your talent, because, you know, I remember the old story, and I probably shouldn't tell this story, but it's the old story of, you may not remember this guy 20, 30 years ago saying Tiny Bubbles, his name was Don Ho. And there were these, and he was playing in a dive in Hawaii. And there was four marketing guys sitting in there and saying, you know what? I could make this piece of crap a millionaire. And they laughed at him because he was really not that good. But they did. They made him a millionaire on this song, Tiny Bubbles. Everybody in America knew the song. And so you don't necessarily have to be talented. You just have to have the right people around you. But that's the rare case. So what I want to hear about is your journey. And when we were chatting before the show, you had talked to me that you had tried out at American Idol and other shows. And, you know, inform us of that. What is that like? What is that process of going through American Idol or America's Got Talent or whatever those? What is that like?
Yeah, it's very interesting. So when I the first show I ever auditioned for was, I believe it was The Voice. So I had a quote unquote special casting sort of audition process because I went straight to the producer's round, which was because I went through the record label company I was working with that produced my EP. But I went to the producer's round. I luckily got to skip the cattle call step, but I did the cattle call step for American Idol. But you sing for,
well,
the
wait
producers.
A minute. Tell me about the cattle call step, because I don't think most of us even know what the cattle call step is.
Got it. Okay, so when you sign up to try out for, say, American Idol, you show up to the venue that they're auditioning everyone at, and it is essentially the longest line you've ever seen that you wait in for. I think we were in our line to check in for probably a couple hours, and then you check in and they give you your number and they put you in a seat in the arena, or at least that's how it worked for Idol, and they put you in a little seat in groups, and then they'll take each group down one by one. And they look like little voting booths, like they're all like separated by curtains, and there are different producers in each little like curtain room.
Uh-huh.
So you go in and you sing. You have like three songs prepared, and you sing for the producer, and then they say yes or no. They hand you a little slip. I was lucky enough to get a yes, and I got my slip and went back. I think either it was the next day or the day after, and they ask you to come back and you sing a certain song that they give you. They give you I believe they're approved songs that have been approved to be on air on television, so you practice those and you sing whichever one fits you the best. And then same process over again. You sing for them, and it's a different producer that time, and they say yes or no. That was the step that I got cut right before the Hollywood round, or whatever it's called now. I think it still is Hollywood round, but that's where I was cut right before that step. And then the voice process was a little different. Like I said, I went straight to the producer round. I got cut after the producer round for that one as well. But it's a crazy process. They all kind of do it differently, but usually you see the producers way before the actual celebrity judges. You go through multiple rounds before you get to that step, unlike what they show on TV, which is just you show up and you go. But there's a lot of steps before that. So
And what is the time duration of all of that?
It goes pretty fast. So it's like the first audition, at least this is how it worked back when I was, I guess I was like 17 maybe. I think for me it was like I auditioned the first day, and then they asked me to come back. I think it was the next day or the following day. And then I believe after that, you just keep going. I think it's like a full week of you go back and forth. And then if you make it to the judges and the Hollywood rounds, then they put you in a hotel. And I think the production schedule is like every day. They just knock it out. They do Hollywood rounds. And then after that, then you go to live shows.
So you didn't do the producer's round. You didn't do the Simon Cowhawk or whatever his name is.
No, no, I never made it to the like on air celebrity judges audition part. I always made it to the the last producer's round before it.
So tell me, honestly, now, this is going to be hard for you to be this candid, but how many times were you better than the people that were selected?
I'll be super honest and say probably most of the time. Like, I think, and that's when I hit the cold, hard reality that it's not about talent, like you were saying earlier. It's really not about the best vocalist or the best songwriter necessarily. You have to have that it factor. You have to have what the industry is missing at that time. So say there's, I think the reason that when I auditioned, I'm like a country singer-songwriter at this point was where I was kind of going for. But they already had a Taylor Swift, you know? They already had a blonde singer-songwriter, Taylor Swift. So there really wasn't a huge gap in the industry that I was needed. And I think that they had an excess of you know, women singer-songwriters in that world. And I think that that was a reason that I didn't make it that far, because it's all about timing and about your brand and how they can market you on this television show. And will you appeal to their audience? And that's the issue with shows like that, is it's never really about talent. It's all about the TV show. Like, at the end of the day, it's a TV show that needs ratings, you know? So it's never really purely about necessarily about talent. It's kind of about your brand, essentially, and who you appeal to.
How do the artists now that you know, there's so many artists in the business, you know, I think in the 70s when I was listening to music, and the 60s especially, there were probably 15 groups, maybe 20. And that was it, you know. I mean, that was, there right. just were no, now there's, you know, now there's 15 million. How does an artist emerge with, you know, like, you know, use, for example, I don't even know if it's a really good example or not, but Billie Eilish, who is sort of unique. And how does somebody like that ever make it in the industry when they're not playing the game? They're not doing it the way that the marketing people want you to do it. How do they even, I can see how they make it, how the public will like them, but how do they get past it so the public can even see them?
I think that nowadays social media is huge, and a lot of times record labels and management companies and all these entertainment companies won't even look at you until you have your own social media built and you have your brand and you have your fans, and it's such a business that I think the way she appeals is because there's really no one else like her, and she's easily distinguishable. And again, I've said this so many times, but like, she essentially herself is her own brand, and she has her own little niche in this pop music world. So I think it's just because she's very different and not essentially, like, there's not another one of her out there.
What about, you know, there's something, my guess is because I've dabbled in the arts in one way or another, whether it's writing or painting, and I know there is something that's getting expressed that is genuinely out of the core me. And there has to come a time for me, because, see, I don't need to make a living at it. I'm a retired man, so I can kind of do whatever I want to do. But that whatever comes out of me, it really almost doesn't make a difference if there's an audience. Because I kind of don't care if there's an audience. I just feel like I have to express this. There's a book I want to write, and I know the way you write books now, unless you self-publish, which is so common. But if you go with publishers, you've got to have an audience. You know, you've got to have 20,000 people in your in your blog list or your post list or your Facebook list. Because if you don't, they're not going to do, they won't even do marketing. Publishers don't even do marketing anymore. They want you to do all the marketing and they're going to set up. So what happens to the artist that truly has something in her heart that she feels passionate about delivering, that she just has to deliver, but there may not at this point, given the state of the industry, not given the state of the public, but the state of the industry, they don't foresee a market for it. What becomes of an artist like that?
I don't know. I feel like if you are passionate and you are authentic and honest and you put out good creative music that people love, I think that you will find that success and you will build a fan base or you will have followers that love what you do. It may not be on the scale of Billie Eilish, of course, but if it's good, you know, people do listen. I have a ton of friends like that who are creating and obviously they aren't huge, huge artists, but people listen, you know, and if you just keep creating and doing what you love, I feel like it will resonate with someone out there. You know, it doesn't have to be millions of followers, but I am passionate about people still creating and doing what they love because people will listen. You know, their music is universal.
Yeah, or whatever, and it doesn't have to be music. It can be whatever they're doing in life.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's really, I love that. Kevin Rose, writer, did Kevin Rose do Wired? Is Kevin Rose the creator of Wired? I don't know, maybe. But he talks about 1,000 devoted fans, and that's all anybody needs. If you have 1,000 devoted fans, you can do anything you want in the world. That's it can be fewer than 1,000, but he's working with people that have hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, and even million followers. But he just says it's 1,000 devoted fans that are devoted to what you're doing, to the art that you are producing, to whatever you're creating. How do you feel about that? Do you feel you have something that you're passionate about that you would like to get out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll never obviously give up on music. And I'm finally now, with the world slowed down because of quarantine and everything, I'm getting my passion. I'm finding that I have this urge to get my creative side back up and running. And my friend and I, who we met through music, through that academy that we were at together, songwriting, and we're going to start a podcast as well. So we're just going to keep the creative juices flowing, and we just had an urge to do it. And we're like, why not? So I think I'll always continue creating music. And I think I'm a creative at heart, and I'm sure you can relate. But I think that now is the time to get back into that creative mindset after working in the corporate world for a long time.
That's incredible. That's really good. And I just, as an aside, I want to say I really encourage you to attempt a podcast because you have the personality and the voice. Not everybody has that. There are people that want to do podcasts, and I want to tell them, please don't. You know, you've got no business, but that's not you. You have the voice, you have the audio presence, and I think you would do a really good job. I don't want to be stealing everything from last week's show, but we talked about something from last week's show, and we talked about a quote from Seth Godin that is really impacting the way I'm viewing life, and at 71, I'm still creating and adding new things to my life. My life is not, I'm not, you know, a stodgy, set in his way 71-year-old. I'm kind of a 71 going on 40. I just, you know, I have so many things in mind. And have you ever heard, there's two different ways of approaching this. There, of a life planning process is that you, and I used to encourage this of people, is that imagine if you had no constraints and you were guaranteed success, what would your life look like in the next 5 to 10 years? So, you know, you get away from that, from the negative voices, from the, we talked about them on the show, Paul. What did we talk about those voices? The, not the negative voices, but the preventative voices that keep you from doing things. You get rid of those, and so you'll try anything. So I always liked that exercise, but Seth Godin framed it exactly in the opposite. He said, what would you do if you knew you were going to fail? Now check this out. What would you do if you knew you were going to fail, but you were so enamored with it and so compelled by it that you had to do it anyway? Isn't that a great question?
Yeah, that's awesome. It's scary to think about, but it's very true.
Yeah, it's scary to think about when you're young and you got food to put on the table, but when you're retired and you're a kept man because your wife does so well, you can think that way.
Totally. Yes, I agree. I really like that point of view that he's coming from.
Yeah, and that would be, you know, I don't want to play your life coach or anything, but you are so good. You have so much to offer, and it is just, it's a shame to the world that you are not out with your 1,000 devoted fans or your 10,000 or your 1 million devoted fans, because you really are. The listeners have to listen. I'm going to include a link on the show notes of your songs, and the listeners will see what you have to offer, and you have so much to offer.
Thank you. Yeah, I think now's the time that I'm going to get my creative juices flowing again, do the podcast, and I will never give up singing. Thank you for saying that.
Well, please do. And if you ever need outside encouragement, give me a shout. Say, Charlie, I'm feeling down. Make me feel good. And I'd be happy to do that. Haley, you have been incredible. This is just such a fun and delightful podcast. This is, I think, so enlightening and so insightful for so many people. Thank you for spending time with me today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. I'm excited. Now I was like, this is a test run, so now I can actually feel comfortable like starting a podcast.
Yeah.
It's a nice little experience.
And feel free to contact me, and I can give you some clues on how you start it. Producer Paul and I always have ideas of how you start a podcast and what are some of the boundaries and the rules that you want to follow. And I'd be happy to give you feedback on that. Now, do you have any objection if I put your email in and listeners wanted to get a hold of you about anything? Is that okay with you, or is that a private?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Okay, I'll be sure to put that in the notes, and say hi to your family for me. Give them my love. Your dad and I talked about coming up to your house sometime soon, and just getting in touch again, because it's been so many years, and we have always been close as families. It would be nice to get in touch with all of you.
Yes, absolutely. You need to come see the house.
Do I?
Yes, it's super nice. They did a great job. They pretty much redid the whole thing. So, yeah, it looks great. You got to come see it.
Well, your mom's got such incredible taste that...
She sure does. I'll give it to her.
Yeah. Give them my love.
And, I will.
And thanks again for coming in. And I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie. And please... be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. Tell your friends about us. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.